Hello and welcome back to Not If I Review You First, the podcast. We need a new catchphrase.
Yeah, because we're trying not to always just brainstorm fan fiction.
Yeah, we over this past 8 months, I think, of this double hiatus, sequel to the first hiatus.
Yeah,
you know, it's like how Homestuck did the mega pause and then the giga pause. It's like that. Tell your friends. Not if I review you first. It's like Homestuck.
Is that a good thing? I don't think that's a good thing.
No, it means that we rapidly declined in quality right after our best act.
I don't like that prognosis.
And then we turn into clown perverts.
Oh, boy.
No. So.
Anyway.
We are attempting to streamline the process and make sure it is a much more collaborative process. So we discuss like what we need to focus on, things that we can either we're both familiar with, and if we're not both familiar with, we are going to be sending each other like the relevant information beforehand. No more of this going in blind stuff, trying to figure out what's happening, because really, quite often we don't figure out what's happening. Quite often we're just like, one person is gushing about the thing that they're very passionate about, and the other person is going, wow, okay, wow.
Yeah, like, we are interested in each other's passions, it's just, it's hard to add stuff when you don't know about stuff.
Yes, we're trying to make this less along for the ride and more everyone gets a chance to steer.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't delay this any longer. Star Wars.
We've done, like, 3 of Star Wars episodes beforehand?
Yeah, we did the prequel the prequel series.
We did prequel stuff. We did, like, some interquel stuff. I think we touched on the Thrawn of it all, but I don't think we went super deep into that.
Yeah. And didn't one of our guests, like, their whole thing was trying to rescue, like, the KOTOR stuff from EA?
Yes, hang on. Theo. Theo, yeah. Had us break into EA headquarters and rescue Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've done a couple Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. I will say, the ones that we did were very much like, well, like we said, they were very much brainstorming fan fiction, saying, ooh, wouldn't this be a great idea? And I would say we were a bit high on our own supply.
Yeah. Honestly, the thing about the prequels is that I think there were a couple good ideas there. Execution was fucking awful. And there's a 5-hour Jesse Gender video about the problems that the Star Wars series has, and yeah, I think she's got a right assessment about George Lucas. Like, even if he were to do a lot more collaboration on his works, he's not the person he was back in, like, the mid-70s.
Yeah, but also, I think my take on the prequels, while I agree with that they had not the best execution, I feel like you would have to change so little about the prequels that it wouldn't be worth it to talk about for a full podcast episode.
Yeah, it's really just like, you didn't really need the Metachlorians. Maybe just like, honestly, it really comes down to better directing of the actors.
Here's the thing, the Metachlorians are just trying to provide a scientific explanation for Force stuff. All you really need to do is have Obi-Wan scan Anakin and say, the Force readings are off the charts, and that's it. And then he reports back and says, oh yeah, he's got big Force energy, and the rest of the Jedi Council goes, oh, he could be the Chosen One. And that's really all you need.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying, it's like, the devil's in the details, and there are so few details we need to adjust that, like the whole prequel trilogy, fixing it is like 5 different things. It wouldn't be worth it for the full episode.
It's like, just the subtle changes. Yeah.
The sequel trilogy, however.
The sequel trilogy. Oh god, the sequel trilogy. The curse of J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams comes in with... He did actually have a plan, an overarching plan. But at some point, whoever decided that each film was going to be directed by a different director said that they didn't need to be beholden to the plan. So Rian Johnson decides to go his own route. And Rian Johnson brings in a lot of good ideas with his sequel. But they don't mesh with the ideas set up in J.J. Abrams' film. And then The Last Jedi becomes very divisive. And while I like a lot of the parts of The Last Jedi, I do think the parts are greater than the sum of the whole.
Yeah.
It's kind of mishmashed together. None of the stakes of the subplots seem to relate back to the stakes of the whole film.
Yeah. And, like, this is a problem that the entire prequel trilogy had. Like, the first movie had the Starkiller base, and that amounts to a whole lot of nothing because it's blown up, but the First Order doesn't attempt to build another one, like, in the original trilogy. And then the third movie, Palpatine returns.
Somehow.
And from what I understand, like, this goes back to J.J. Abrams' plan, I guess, because he, according to Daisy Ridley, like, he was kind of going between whether or not to make Rey a descendant of Palpatine, or, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi's daughter, or Skywalker. Like, he seemed to be changing his mind every week during the filming of this trilogy.
Yeah. And, you know, I can understand his justification for ultimately going with Palpatine, because he said it was the only thing that she could hear that would be worse than hearing that she's no one, is that she is the daughter of the worst person. But the thing is, in my opinion, you can be... Well, first off, it just makes... So much of JJ stuff is very similar plot... It has so many similar plot beats to the original trilogy. That bringing in Palpatine as the, I am your grandfather, is just so similar to the Luke situation that it, like, borders on parody. And then again, maybe it would have been fine if they had a chance to set up, but I feel like we'd still be saying the same things, where it's like, it's just the same as the original trilogy again. Like,
yeah.
There's not enough new ideas. And so she's nobody, but she's nobody because her parents... Like, from Ryan's vision, her parents were junk traders who abandoned her. They sold her to Unkar Plot just so that they could have more credits to buy drugs, essentially.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this like, you couldn't be a nobody who also had terrible parents.
Yeah. It's just, it's far more mundane. And I think that might be one of the problems, too, with this entire franchise, with very few exceptions, is that you can't just be a regular person. You have to be somebody in this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Again, go see Jesse Gender's 5-hour video.
And I mean, technically, like, if you're a character in Star Wars, you are going to be somebody. Star Wars is infamously the franchise where everyone is someone.
Well, like, everybody's a main character, and I think there's a lot of trying to connect a lot of, like, the big players together. With very few exceptions.
Well, that, but also, you're 100% correct. I was making a joke about how, like, everyone, like, even bit background characters will have, like, 20 pages of lore on Wikipedia that has been, like, published in official guides to the universe.
Yeah.
There are no background characters in Star Wars.
Yeah, and that's kind of a problem.
Yeah, and it does actually cause another problem, which is that because they kind of have the crutch of Disney money that lets them essentially put out as many lore guides as they want, or not even lore guides, but, like, Star Wars is confident enough that they could have literally any character get their own 3-book YA trilogy, that they will introduce a character with no fanfare and expect the audience to accept that they were there the whole time.
Yeah.
Again, going back to The Last Jedi, Admiral Haldo, it's great. I'm gay, I love Laura Dern. However, she does come out of nowhere. Like,
yeah.
We do need to say this, at least.
Yeah, like, who is she? Who is this purple-haired woman?
I love her, but give us something.
Yeah, why is she so special?
That's the problem with The Last Jedi, is that everyone else has the wrong complaints about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I love the idea of democratizing the Force, and, like, not trying to recreate the Old Republic and the Old Jedi Order. You have to make something new in this situation. But at the same time, you... just, like... Poor Finn. They got such cold feet when it came to Finn. It's like, why the fuck do you even have John Boyega here? He's doing nothing.
Exactly.
Anyway,
we're not starting with The Last Jedi. I said Lindsay, who might be starting with The Last Jedi. Nominally, we are starting with The Force Awakens.
Yeah, because, like... This is the one where it is so obviously a remake of the very first Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
like, damn near beat for beat. Like, I wonder if you could watch the original Star Wars movie, if you could watch A New Hope and The Force Awakens, like, side by side, and if it would sync up.
Not quite, just because there's a longer... I feel like The Force Awakens has a longer first act, but, like, yeah, you've got the first act where people are running around in the desert, and then they find the mentor, then they go to the seedy underbelly bar, then they have to rescue the person who's captured, and then there's the rebel starfight, and then they win!
Yeah. We're trying to remake this into something that is actually, like, unique and different, and in my notes, my two pages of notes, because I ran out of steam. Look, we came up with this idea, like, last week.
Yes. Which I kind of backed away from, just in my process of working through things.
Yeah.
But I originally said, and this is actually something that Lindsay's brother Ryan has said before, that you could almost combine a lot of stuff from The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens into one film, and, like, establish a lot of character stuff and not worry so much about trying to repeat the beats of the original A New Hope.
Yeah.
And I toyed with that in my pitch, because here's... The main thing I was thinking of bringing over was I was going to move the whole Canto Bite sequence to the first movie.
Okay, yeah.
And I think, ultimately, I decided not to do that because that's, like... It's a set piece that I like thematically.
Yeah.
And I want to preserve it as best I can, but again, it just does not fit in with the rest of everything else going on in The Last Jedi. So here's, I don't know when we're going to get to the second film proper, but I at least want to preserve a majority of Canto Bight and kind of build the film around it.
Yeah.
But I do really appreciate the themes it has of, like, it's not just a war, the Star War is not just a war for all these politicians and main characters. It is a battle to protect the lives of these underdogs and underprivileged, and, like, the hope is that not just that the Republic would be defeating the Empire, but that the Republic would be spreading, like, peace and equality across the universe, so that establishments like the Canto Bight Casino wouldn't be springing up and taking advantage of the underprivileged and basically allowing all of the rich to be casual warmongers without worrying about the actual threats.
Yeah, like, that's the idealistic goal and all that. Like, it's disappointing when you think about the history of, like, what we get to generally see in Star Wars in the main movies is that apparently nothing really changes. The series takes place over, like, 70 years when you kind of do the math. Again, this is a very loose sort of math I did probably Friday night, where it's like, okay, so the whole, like, prequel trilogy is probably taking place over about 15-ish years?
Yeah, because Anakin has to grow up and all that.
Yeah. And then you've got The Reign of the Empire, which is about, what, 18 to 25 years probably? Because, like, I think Luke and Leia were supposed to be, like, 18, but also, like, George Lucas is weird about younger women. So, like, for my sanity, I kind of upped it to about 25, and that kind of feels right for, like, a whole generation to grow up only knowing the Empire.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got, episode 1 takes place 32 years before the Battle of Yavin.
Okay.
Like, that's their year counter, is BBY.
Yeah.
And then Clone Wars is 10 years later, and the Clone Wars take place over 3 years. The Imperial Era lasts from 19... years before the Battle of Yavin, officially 5 years after the Battle of Yavin. So, yeah, the Imperial Era is 20 years, and then it takes another 5 years for the Rebel Alliance to fully reinstate the Republic, the New Republic.
Yeah. And then, officially, the sequel trilogy takes place 30 years after that.
Yeah.
Which, again, means another generation has grown up never knowing what the Empire was like.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was reading into the, the Expanded Universe stuff, the canonical, because remember, now everything that comes out about Star Wars is canon.
Yeah.
But the Expanded Universe canon of it, talking about, like, how the First Order was funded, and it does make a lot of sense how it was, like, a lot of people who grew up under the Empire saw, like, a lot more rise of chaos and anarchy under the New Republic, and felt that the Empire, for all of its faults, was preserving order.
Yeah. And, like, if you remember what the Old Republic was like, at the end, it's like, it's this very chaotic period. Even before you had the full-blown Clone Wars, you also had, like, all these economic crises happening. I kind of compare it to the end of the Roman Republic, which, like, most people focus on, like, the era of Caesar and then Octavian and Mark Antony's civil war, and then Octavian becoming Augustus. But, like, a full generation before Caesar even starts, like, actually climbing up the courses of Norum, you have the Gracchi brothers trying to instigate some land reforms in the wake of the Second Punic Wars. Or, no, the Third Punic Wars, which is where, like, Carthage was finally destroyed. Because of this influx of money, but the regular people of Rome had basically been, like, bankrupted, and, like, two generations of men had been wiped out. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, like, going from that, like, the Galaxy Far, Far Away is kind of in a situation where it's, like, going from, like, two generations of a chaotic situation to a more peaceful situation, but I think one of the failures of the Disney era of Star Wars, and I think it comes down to, like, what the producers and the execs are comfortable with, and what they think will get return on investment, is the politics of, like, what a post-imperial system is going to be like. Because one of the complaints about The Mandalorian is just, like, everybody's almost too forgiving of imperial forces. And another thing is, like, there's no real exploration of, like, what the New Republic is trying to do.
Yeah, like, it does seem, and so I have not looked into any of the Star Wars TV shows because it very much kind of became a Star Wars overload for the past few years.
Yeah.
But it does seem like a majority of the shows that take place after Return of the Jedi are dealing with a whole bunch of, like, Imperial loyalists, and it makes sense that there'd be a bunch of those that are, would eventually go on to form the First Order, but I feel like it is an important thing that my take on the New Republic is that they're too forgiving, like you said, they're too centrist, and they're more concerned with keeping their power and keeping the Empire remnants and loyalists in line, that they give them too much string, essentially.
Yeah. So, like, when I was writing up my stuff for, like, just, like, what the background of the universe that the audience is going to be introduced in our version of The Force Awakens, is, like, maybe it is still a bit chaotic, maybe it's still, like, the New Republic is trying to get a handle on things, and you do have, like, this, I'm gonna say, like, the old leadership, like, especially around Mon Martha, maybe even, Leia, are probably, like, the centrists now. It's like, hey, Tana, remember when I had you do research into the French Revolution for that one chapter in one of our fics?
I do remember that. Yeah, I don't like the idea of Leia being a centrist.
Yeah, okay, she's not a centrist, but...
I can buy, and honestly, I don't think Mon Mothma would be, I think she'd end up being a centrist in her actions, but I don't think she'd be, like, that's her angle. Well, I think she's just so focused on keeping the peace that she might end up being too forgiving.
Well, the point I was gonna get is, like, the whole lead up to the terror where, like, and I'm talking about the French Revolution, where, like, it was a case of, like, one side outpacing another side. Like, you had, like, the Girondists who were majority Republican. They were, like, at the point where it's like, we don't even want to try a constitutional monarchy. We're just going to fully abolish it and try something new. But then you had the Jacobins, like, outflank them from the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe Mon Mothma in her older age, she got outflanked that way. And bring in stuff from the best entry so far in the new Star Wars canon, Rogue One. Like, it's implied that there are multiple factions within the Rebel Alliance. In fact, it's in the name, Rebel Alliance. There's more than one way of doing things.
Yes.
So, like, I was also just, like, doing a quick look at the Spanish Civil War, because there was a whole bunch of different factions amongst the Republican forces who were fighting Franco. like, you did have the official Republican forces who were pretty left-wing socialists, who were backed mostly by the Soviets. But then you had groups like CNT and POEM and, like, various anarchist, socialist, anti-fascist groups. But, like, they had different political philosophies. It's just nobody but, like, the Soviets and the Popular Front supported them, and then the Soviets sort of went and betrayed them because Stalin is a fucking bastard.
The other angle I'm looking at here is I'm not looking at this from a term of, like, okay, so the reintegration of the, for like, the imperial remnants is very reminiscent kind of post-World War II kind of stuff with the fascists. But I'm looking at this from a much more modern perspective, where I am looking at it from essentially a right-wing and a left-wing party within the New Republic.
Yeah.
The First Order in my version is they're not a separatist movement, they are a political party. In fact, I wrote out the opening scrawl.
Yeah, like, that's also kind of the way I was leaning too. Like, they are birthed out of, like, discontent over this seeming, like, unending, it looks like unending chaos.
Well, oh, that's, so that's the other thing, is that, like, it's stated that it's a period of Cold War when The Force Awakens open, and I think that's actually a good place to open.
Yeah.
I feel like the anarchy, like, a true anarchy era, that should be the focus of the second movie.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we could get into the weeds a bit later with, like, the different factions, but, like, I'm imagining, like, the New Republic doesn't really control what the Old Republic controlled.
Yeah.
Like, you still have the Unknown Regions, which are just too difficult to explore.
There is still chaos in the Outer Rim.
Yeah.
But it is very much like a that's over there's problem. And then I think, but I think the First Order would be the ones who are like, but what if it comes, it turns inward, and then the inner planets have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how they're getting support. But I think the second movie, because my idea is that, I don't have an actual set piece, but my idea for the climax of this film is that that's when the tensions break and, like, the Cold War turns hot, and then it becomes chaos because now everyone kind of has to scramble to pick a side.
Yeah.
And you know what? The First Order might be dictators, but they made the spaceships run on time.
Yeah, there's that feeling. There's the whole separatist movement, which was introduced in the prequel trilogy. Now, the problem with the separatist movement is that they were portrayed as being, like, the goons of the banking clans, and, oh, this was a front for the Sith. And I'm like, okay, but what if, because Count Dooku, like, dies in the second film of the prequel trilogy.
He dies in the first 10 minutes of the third film.
Oh, yeah. He dies in the first 10 minutes of the third film. You don't have Count Dooku anymore, and I would not be surprised if the banking clans were kind of relegated out of any sort of power by the Empire. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Separatist movement, or Separatist movements, probably plural, became their own thing. And you have, like, human Separatist movements, or, like, on planets that are majority human and planets that are majority not human, etc., etc., etc. And, like, part of the situation now in the sequel trilogy that we're going to plan out is, like, there is a divide between, like, the Separatists who are left-leaning and, like, they don't want to be part of the Reborn Republic. They going fine on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they suffered under the Empire. So that's why they're anti-Empire, they're anti-First Order. But you have others that align themselves with the First Order, thinking, like, this will help strengthen our Separatist movement.
Yeah. And that's actually something very similar to what happened, apparently, with the Knights of Ren. Hey, remember the Knights of Ren?
Oh yeah, the Knights of Ren! Who the hell are they?
So apparently, they were, like, rogue tribes of dark side adepts who were actually aligned with the, like, factions of the Rebel Alliance during the Imperial Age, and then betrayed them near the end because they were worried that they were going to be exterminated by Vader and Sidious.
Ha! Huh.
Now, I don't know how I feel about that. Honestly,
no.
I feel like throwing that out.
Yeah.
Because I feel like your pitch for what kind of factions would do that makes a lot more sense with it being the Separatists than the Knights of Ren, who came the fuck out of nowhere. Apparently they worked for the woman in Solo, love interest lady.
Oh, the one played by Emilia Clarke?
Yes.
Huh. That's...
Because here's...
The Knights of Ren seem like it should be, like, Kylo and his fanboys.
I'm going to expand on that. If the First Order party are the Republicans, the Knights of Ren are QAnon.
Yes.
I like the idea of saying that, like, one of the other selling points the First Order is trying to say is that they are reining in the Force users so that they are truly working for the government again, unlike the anarchists that allowed the Old Republic to fall, and then the ones that caused, the First Order is also, they're trying to make it clear, like, we're not the Empire. We're just trying to preserve the parts of the Empire that worked. And while the Force Sensitives of the Rebellion did help topple some of the more extreme versions of the Empire, they also performed many terrorist actions against fundamental pillars of Imperial structure.
Or we can just, like, go, let's make the Republic great again.
Exactly, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying specifically for the Force Wheels that, like, look, we have the Knights of Ren working for us, and they're probably trying to pitch the Knights of Ren as the new Jedi Knights.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I read my opening scrawl to you?
Yes, go ahead. It's definitely better than mine.
Corruption has befallen the New Republic. With Luke Skywalker's failure to resurrect the Jedi Order and his ensuing absence, the militaristic First Order Party is attempting to seize control of political power. Senator Leia Organa, newly appointed as leader of the Resistance Party, has sent her most daring pilot on a secret mission to the desert planet of Jakku. There, an old friend has discovered a possible clue to Luke's whereabouts. Unbeknownst to them, their secret plot has been discovered by the First Order. Their leadership has dispatched their most trusted agent, the mysterious Force user Kylo Ren, to follow them, and, if he succeeds, stop whatever they hope for in its tracks. And the thing is, my first act is very similar to the actual movie's first act. Do we want to get into actually talking about the movie? Because I feel like we've established a good backdrop on which to awaken this force.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I think the first act of The Force Awakens was actually fairly strong.
Yeah. I have added a scene that will help inform some stuff going forward. And I've actually made a major change that does kind of throw a wrench into everything. So the first scene is actually going to open on the First Order flagship. It's not a Star Destroyer, because they're totally not the Empire.
Yeah.
But it's going to have Kylo Ren in his quarters, and he's going to call Trooper FN2817 into his quarters. He has been informed by his superiors that the Trooper is struggling in his training sessions, which surprises Kylo, because he senses great potential in this Trooper. He wants him to be on the front lines of the coming mission to Jakku, and if he proves himself, he might be able to join the Knights of Ren himself. And FN is going to be like, yeah, okay, man, whatever, because the Knights of Ren are freaky cultists. And he exits and he sees them just kind of standing stock still, staring straight ahead. He's like, oh, yeah, I totally want to join y'all. And then it's going to go basically the same. It's going to have Poe meets with Lor San Tekka and BB-8s are too, obviously. He learns that there is someone in a larger settlement on Jakku who had been to the village a few weeks ago, apparently knows something about Luke's whereabouts, but he returned to the larger settlement, so they'll have to make their way up there.
Yeah.
But they are happy to shelter these resistant members for now, because they'd be happy to see the First Order taken down. Like I explicitly say, yeah, they've been raising taxes on the whole planet for the past year, and they will happily get rid of the First Order if they had any kind of representation to do so. Oh, another change I'm making is that, so it's not actually even a flagship. It is just a base. Because it makes it easier to do some stuff if instead of them being in orbit and having people having to go back and forth from the surface to the spaceship, it's just a military barracks that has been, implanted on Jakku.
Yeah.
Anyways, then the attack on the village is going to happen the same way. Finn is going to be horrified, and Poe is going to be captured. But instead of Finn going back, he's going to flee into the desert. He gets his friend smears the blood on his helmet. He's horrified. He's gonna just grab a speeder bike and run out into the sands and then he'll pass out there while Poe has been captured. And BB-8 is also going to flee into the sands, and then he's going to find the FN, because he hasn't been named yet.
Yeah.
He's not going to find FN. BB-8's going to flee into the desert, and he's going to find Rey. They're going to have the same situation.
Yeah.
And eventually, the parties will converge at the base again. Right now, FN is going to be wearing the armor still, and so he's going to, like, try and take Rey in and, like, get back in the good graces, and Rey's going to immediately call him on his bullshit. She's going to be like, you seem a little short for a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And then he'll be taken out by a mysterious figure who's also at this base, or at this settlement. A mysterious old man in a cloak who, Leia, that's the name I haven't heard for a long time.
Is it Luke?
No, it's Han.
Oh, okay.
Because here's something that bugged me about Force Awakens, on top of all the other stuff I already talked about, is that they just happen upon the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And then they just happen upon Han Solo and Chewie.
Yeah, and it just so happens that Han went back to being a smuggler.
Yeah. So my thinking is that Han was stationed on Jakku. He was following Luke or something, and he just waited there because he was like, maybe, like, we'll hear word back from him.
Yeah.
I found the other reason. This is getting ahead of myself. Eventually, we're going to reveal in this film, in my vision of it, that Ben turned bad, and yes, he turned bad, he became Kylo, and he killed a whole bunch of other of Luke's students, but some of them did escape.
Okay.
And now Kylo, like, between his first order duties, him and the Knights of Ren are hunting down the remaining, like, students.
Yeah.
Han tracked one of the students to Jakku and has essentially been sheltering them.
Okay. Oh, is that Rey? Like, you're establishing her as a Jedi?
No. Like, Rey is still going to be Force-sensitive, but in my version, I want to keep the origin that she ends up with from The Last Jedi.
Okay.
And also, this student... We're not going to do the Star Wars thing that I talked about before, where it's like, it's the character!
Yeah.
It's Glup Shiddo! I want audiences to be able to enter this film and understand who these people are without having to go into Barnes & Noble and pick up 7 novels.
Yeah.
So they're going to meet the student who, like, has... Like, they've had a Force vision of Luke and have, like, scrawled out, like, coordinates of where they are. But then the First Order... is going to attack because they follow the tracker on Finn's armor. At this point, though, Finn is going to decide to, like, throw his lot in with them.
Okay.
And they're going to flee, and they're like, the only person who might be able to get us out of here is Poe.
Yeah.
And so they have to go rescue him from the base. And then that's when the new trio will be created.
Yeah. Because another thing that was bullshit about the sequel trilogy is that Finn, Poe, and Rey didn't really hang out with each other until the last fucking movie.
Exactly. Now, I want to hear your version of the first act, if you have anything different, and see if we want to combine any parts of that, what we want to go forward with.
Yeah, like, well, like, I was remembering when we, like, floated this idea last week at each other, and, like, you mentioned that you wanted Jessica Pava to be a bigger character, because she was in a lot of the advertisements that, like, she was a nothing character. So I'm like...
Yeah, well, not even in the advertisements. She was just kind of latched onto by the fandom.
Yeah.
She's kind of becomes their sequel version of Wedge Antilles.
Yeah, like, I was thinking, because sometimes I get into my whole Top Gun Maverick field, like, what if Poe and Jessica were, like, the Maverick and Goose of Star Wars?
I do like that idea.
I wasn't entirely sure about how much of a bigger role she was going to have, other than, like, maybe she comes in and helps with the rescue.
Okay.
Or, like, she and Poe were sent to Jakku to follow up on this clue, and they got separated. I kept a lot of the original beats. One of the problems with The Force Awakens was that Finn and Poe get away from that ship, but then they're immediately separated out in the desert, and then Poe doesn't show up until, like, the very end.
Yeah, no. That's why I wanted the, like, Finn is captured in the planetside base, and then he's rescued by Finn and Rey.
Yeah. So I was gonna do that too. I think I was just gonna do, like, slightly different thing. And then, like, I was debating on whether or not to have Harrison Ford in this film at all. Because Harrison Ford famously wanted Han to die.
Yeah, well, I think we should keep him and still kill him.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, maybe because to keep it less crowded, maybe they don't encounter Han on Jakku. Maybe, like, the person who, like, they just go straight to Luke's former student, who's able to pass on, like, the partial message before they're killed by the First Order tracking Finn.
Yeah. And then they go grab Poe, and then they need to get off Jakku.
Yeah, and that can take them right... We bypass the whole thing with the Kanji Club and friends, and we can go straight to Takodana with Maz Kanata.
Yeah, because I think that part is really important, and that's some of the points where I had, like, a lot of stuff, because I'm like, this is probably going to be our big exposition dump to get us, like, up to speed on what's been happening.
Well, I think Poe would be the exposition dump first. Like, we'll have some, like, a scene after the rescue, we'll have a First Order scene where we establish some more stuff with them, and then we'll cut back to, like, Finn, Poe, Rey, and BB-8 on the ship, which would just be, like, a First Order flyer. We're not going to bring the Millennium Falcon back yet.
Yeah.
Where Poe will explain, BB-8 will be, like, super mistrusting of Finn at first, and Poe will be the guy like, hey, man, he rescued us, don't worry about it. And then, I don't know, they'll eye fuck each other a little bit, because Storm Pilot is real.
Yeah.
Not to show my hand.
Storm Pilot is real. I don't know, I like Rey being, like, their ace best friend.
Yeah.
We'll probably have to deal with the whole Reylo situation.
There won't be a Reylo situation.
Because, like, I think with, like, both Finn and Rey are the Force-sensitive ones here. And I wouldn't... Like, in my mind, I think Kylo still kind of fixates on Rey because she has the most doubts about herself. Stemming from, like, the... She was just dumped on Jakku, and she never knew why. Because she was so little when that happened. And she's the most, I would say, self-conscious. Yeah, just like a whole bundle of, like, I'm fine. No, I'm not fine.
Yeah, so my thinking, part of it at least, is, so I was going through the What Could Have Been section of TV Tropes for Force Awakens. And apparently in earlier drafts, the characters that eventually evolved into Finn and Kylo were friends. And Kylo was genuinely hurt by Finn's betrayal.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to keep that because Kylo still, like, sees... Kylo doesn't have a close relationship. Like, the first time he singles Finn out is probably, like, shortly before the events of the film. But I do think Kylo is eyeing Finn as, like, another member of his fucked up dark side cult.
Yeah.
And he's very much... He takes it personally that Finn throws a lot in with people working with the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's less a friend betrayal and more, my new toy got away.
Yeah.
And then I think when he comes calling on Takodana, he's going after Finn, and then he sees Rey and becomes fixated on her instead.
Yeah. And I think going off of that, he just smells the vulnerability off of her, or senses, but, like, yeah. He's almost like a natural predator like that.
Yeah.
And, like, how did Finn wind up with the First Order? I think that's a question that we should answer right away.
I still like it being that a majority of the stormtroopers are kids that were kidnapped and brainwashed.
Yeah.
But I'm actually going to plan on digging into that.
Okay.
Do you want me to show my hand for the third movie stuff?
Sure.
So I think the third movie would reveal, like, well, it would confirm and expound the fact that, yeah, the First Order has been grabbing Jedi and grabbing children and brainwashing them. It is going to expand on Janna's role from the third film.
Yeah.
Explicitly, I'm going to say that one batch of children that were stolen from this mysterious old hermit woman who had been, like, gathering up Force-sensitive children for some reason. And this hermit woman will be revealed to be Reva Sivander, a.k.a. the Third Sister.
Oh.
Again, I have not seen Obi-Wan yet, but she was part of the Inquisitorius.
Yeah.
And at the end of Obi-Wan, she, like, dispatches herself, basically, to kill Luke and try and, like, redeem herself in the eyes of the Empire, but she can't bring herself to do it because she's, like, just realized the cycle of abuse.
Yeah.
And so I like the idea that she has kind of been, like, not a foster mother necessarily, but just the warden guardian. She appointed herself to try and find Force-sensitive children and keep them safe should the Empire come calling. And unfortunately, the First Order got there first and stole them out from under her. And so she's kind of, like, she became this, like, much in the same way that Luke did, but worse. She became this blind hermit who, like, kind of lost herself in the anguish of it all.
Yeah.
That she failed her mission again.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get lost in the weeds of that, because that's third movie stuff. Just remember that that's Finn's origin. Yeah. And Poe's origin is also the same, in which she was raised by lesbians on Yavin.
Yeah. He's kind of like a prince of the Republic, if you think about it.
Yeah, he's the golden boy, and I do like the idea that that kind of gets to his head. But that's, again, that's something we can expand on in the second movie.
We could add in the whole, like, thing with Jessica Pava being, like, his goose. Whether or not we kill her off like goose, I don't know. It's that sort of just, like, he's privileged.
Yeah.
He's managed to be raised very privileged and get into this very elite circle if, like, Leia Organa herself picked him for this mission. So, like, on the one hand, he is genuinely talented and good at what he does. On the other hand, he's got a head the size of a watermelon.
Yeah. But back to first movie stuff.
Yeah.
I think that Poe's gonna explain the situation for the audience's benefit, but also for the Finn and Poe, or Finn and Rey's.
Yeah.
And he's gonna say, like, the reason why the New Republic and the Resistance Party are kind of hedging their bets on finding Luke is because they believe if they find Luke, they can find the other Force sensitives, and they're kind of just hedging their bets on the Force, using the Force, and using it against the Empire, because that's what it worked last time.
It'll work this time. You know what? An idea just came to me when Maz Kanata is... Remember the scene where she shows Rey the lightsaber?
Yes.
What if it's not loose? What if it's just kyber crystals that she shows? But, like, Rey still has that Force-sensitive moment with them.
What if it's Vader's?
Oh. Didn't that lightsaber, like... Wasn't that on his funeral pyre at the end of Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, but someone could have snatched it.
Okay.
Let me just quickly Google it. Vader's lightsaber clutched in the severed hand, then fell into the reactor shaft of the DS2 Death Star. So actually, yeah, Vader's lightsaber could have survived. And since Maz Kanata's a pirate, she could have found it in the wreckage and held onto it, because she's like, this might be important later.
Yeah. And the thing about lightsaber colors is that they manifest depending on, like, there's some spiritual stuff involving the souls and all that sort of stuff. So maybe the color it manifests is, like, Vader's... It's like the original color that Anakin had.
Okay. Crystal colors. Each kyber crystal starts out as clear, but once it's awakened by the Force, its color shifts to match the nature of its master. The color of the crystal determines the color of the lightsaber's blade. Some of the most common colors for Jedi lightsabers include blue, green, and violet. Red lightsabers are typically attuned to those who have succumbed to the dark side of the Force.
Yeah. And Anakin's was originally blue.
So, I just got an idea.
Okay.
What if when we see Kylo Ren at the start, he's still got his, like, crossguard lightsaber, but it's green?
Ooh.
And then when he kills Han at the end, that's when it turns red.
Yeah. I know, I like that.
Because I don't know if it's ever happened in the canon of a crystal, like, changing on the fly, but I think it would be a good representation of just how far he's fallen.
Yeah.
And then whoever duels him at the end, whoever has Vader's lightsaber, that starts off red, but then just by their, like, willingness to protect their friends, that's, like, it starts to flicker blue.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, I think we're gonna keep it that Finn is Force-sensitive, but I think Rey would be the one who duels Kylo at the end. But I think the fact that she's wielding a red lightsaber kind of, like, helps go into the anguish of her, like, well, what if I was evil along?
Yeah.
Whereas when Finn is able to get his lightsaber, it's just, he gets a purple one.
Shout out to Mace Windu. Yeah.
That's a sequel thing.
Yeah.
Also, would be them getting their own lightsabers. But yeah, I think Maz Kanata shows Rey Vader's lightsaber in the hopes that it'll, like, help her unlock something.
Yeah.
But it just puts fear into her, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, she runs away.
A note I had for the Takanata scene. This is where we can find Han and Chewie, first off.
Yeah.
Han can be working as a mechanic, essentially, and Chewie is the bartender.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of, you said you wanted a new Chewie. Like, because we have a new trio and we have a new droid, you said you wanted a new Chewie. Do you have any ideas for that?
Oh, because I was almost like, hey, let's just make a person a Chewie. But, like, Chewie's there. Unless it's, like, Chewie's son.
Do we want to bring Lumpy into this?
The most cursed thing we could do is bring something in from the holiday special? Yes.
I'm sure Chewbacca had other children with better names.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe Lumpy is just a nickname.
Well, it is, because his, like, it's Lumpawaru.
That is a terrible, terrible name.
Because we need to think of, like, something that can be abbreviated into something that's funny, but, like, the expanded one doesn't sound silly. Or, what if... You know how George Lucas' original vision for Return of the Jedi, he wanted the Empire to be defeated by a primitive race, and it was going to be the Wookiees, but then he decided that didn't work because he'd already established that Wookiee is a gadgeteer guy.
Yeah.
And so replace him with the Ewoks.
Yeah. Oh, we have an Ewok?
What if the new Chewie is an Ewok?
Yes, I love it.
And apparently, Wicket has a son, like an infant son by the time of the Rise of Skywalker, but we don't have to make him wait that long. Yes, Warwick Davis was 11 years old when he played Wicket, but we don't know if Wicket was 11 years old.
Yeah.
So we could have Pommet Warwick end up being their new Chewbacca, their new Baka.
Yeah, he's like every dwarf barbarian who in a D&D party ever.
Oh, I was thinking that he still fills the role of Chewie, and he's, like, the gadgets guy, and he and Rey can get into, like, little squabbles because she's also the gadgets person.
Yeah, yeah. But also, Chewie is kind of the muscle, too.
Yeah.
It's a whole, like, yes, the Ewoks look like teddy bears, but they could also, like, fucking bust her teeth in. They brought down the Empire.
But this is an Ewok who's, like, his dad joined Senator Wicket of the New Republic. And then his rebellious son who threw his lot in with the space pirates.
Yeah. Scandal all
around. This is an Ewok who knows how to use a slag caster.
Yeah.
That's a slug thrower. That's what they call guns in Star Wars.
Oh god. Yeah, we have that. We establish our new Chewie. I think.
Yes.
This is where, like, Maz Kanata and Han figure out that Luke is hiding on Achto. We do a big fight scene with Kylo.
Yes. My other thinking for this fight scene, because every Star Wars needs a big monster attack.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that Maz Kanata's bar is, like, on the back of some kind of big ol' space turtle thing.
Ooh. Island turtle. Lion turtle.
Yeah, so when the fighting breaks out between, like, her forces and the Resistance fighters and the First Order fighters, it's also awakens the turtle, and they have to deal with it just, like, rampaging around this lake.
Yeah. I'm gonna do a big old calm down thing while our plucky heroes manage to escape.
Rey and Finn both figure out, like, the brunt of their Force-sensitive stuff here.
Yeah.
And Rey uses it in a fight against Kylo, and Finn can use it to, like, calm the turtle.
Yeah. And then they fly off. This is kind of where I ran into trouble, where it's, like, okay, the next part is, like, really just, like, getting everybody to Achto.
Do we want everybody to go to Achto, though?
Yeah, that's the problem, but it's, like, we are trying to keep the crew together as much as possible, but at the same time, like, Return of the Jedi had Luke go off to Dagobah to hang out with Yoda.
Yeah, I don't want it to end with the whole Resistance showing up at Luke's doorstep. Yeah, no. I think it's more meaningful if it's just Rey and Chewie and R2.
Yeah. I do want Finn to wield a lightsaber at some point, because he is Force-sensitive.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's gonna be faster at figuring things out, I think. Maybe, like, his whole journey with becoming a Jedi is to go and find his former foster mother.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think, again, these are things that kind of, like, come up in the second and third movies. I think we have to figure out how we have to figure out the ending scene.
Yeah.
The one that kind of lights the match of this new civil war.
Yeah. And even if Han was kind of, like, hanging out with Maz Kanata, you know, keeping a low profile, like, he's still very famous. And if Kylo kills him, and if it's in a public enough setting, like, that could be the big spark that causes the civil war.
So what if they'll still go to that snow planet, but it's not the fucking Starkiller. No more Death Stars.
Yeah. Look, there was, in one of the novelizations, one of the other Imperial officers was, like, thankful that the original Death Star blew up because it now freed up the budget for, like, more practical shit.
Yeah.
It is not a practical weapon.
Yeah, exactly. But they'll still go to the planet of Ilum.
Yeah.
We can just say that that's like the seat of the First Order High Command, basically. Yeah. And so it is like a public setting. It's on par with Naboo, essentially, in terms of like civilization.
Yeah.
Kylo can take Rey to Ilum. The only reason that they think they have time to not like pursue immediately, well, actually no, well, Rey will be taken and Finn will go immediately after her.
Yeah.
Because like, as much as he gives him grief in the first act, she's probably going to be the first person who's like generally nice to him, as in, isn't like, hey, join my cult.
Yeah.
And because Finn left, Poe is going to want to go right after them too, because he's got these feelings inside and he doesn't understand. But Han's going to be the one who's like, we need to like slow down. And this can also be like, Han's the one who calls Leia, is like, hey, our horrible incel child, our terrible red-pilled child has kidnapped this random girl. I don't know why.
Yeah. Sorry, baby, I haven't talked to you in a while. Could you send help? And that's where we bring in Jessica Pava.
Yeah. Maybe Jessica's the one who's been the replacement pilot for the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Let's have Jessica get together with Rose.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll save that for part two.
Later. And like, maybe Rose's job is as the mechanic of the Millennium Falcon, because that ship is being held together by like very light force sensitivity and duct tape.
I have an idea for Rose's whole deal. But I think Jessica should be the mechanic.
Okay.
She's been refitting the Millennium Falcon because it was truly a piece of junk and she's been trying to keep it up to date.
Like, I think she can still be a pilot, but like, she does have that mechanical background that she's been doing this in her spare time.
Yeah. But okay, so I think the transition here is that Finn flies off after Kylo, who's got Rey in his clutches. The rest of them have to regroup with the Resistance High Command.
Yeah.
Or with the New Republic. And the New Republic leadership is like, we're not going to allow a mission behind enemy lines, or we're not going to allow a mission to, like, go in guns blazing towards the First Order, because that could start a civil war.
Yeah.
And Leia's going to be, like, the only dissenting voice saying, we're already on the brink of a civil war. One way or another, I think by the end of the day, we are going to be embroiled in something.
Mm-hmm.
And officially, they will tell them that they cannot act, and that they have to write Rey off as a casualty of unknown espionage involving parties that they are disavowing knowledge of.
Yeah.
And so Leia's gonna be the one who says, hey, I've had people keeping the Millennium Falcon up to date. Han, Finn, Chewie, or Han, Poe, Chewie, you guys should go after them and save her, because if Ben is obsessed with her like this, then I think she might be the key to finding Luke herself.
Yeah. So yeah, they'll go there in the Millennium Falcon. We still have Han get killed and have the whole scene where Kylo's lightsaber turns blood red.
Yes.
We still have Rey figure out how to do a force mind trick.
Yes.
On Daniel Craig dressed up as a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think she can get herself out, like, halfway there. It's just, like, she still needs the lightsaber. Kylo is still trying to fuck with her mind.
Yeah.
And get her over to him, over to his side, to basically be his bride.
Yeah.
Oh, great. No wonder the Rilo fangirls latched onto this. It's like Eric and Christine from Phantom.
It really is. He's even got the mask.
Yeah.
Finn is basically just trying to futz around. He's trying to, like, disguise himself as a stormtrooper because he was a stormtrooper before, but because he's never actually been stationed here, he doesn't know any of the, like,
yep,
the protocol.
He doesn't know who any of these fucks are.
He'll get chased down, that's when he'll basically collide with Poe and Poe. Yep. Pommet, which is Wicket's son, Pommet is gonna get himself an AT-AT.
Yes!
Or an AT-ST. Just like his dad.
Yep.
Hey, yum-dum-dum-dum-dum! Oh, we haven't addressed the Phasma in the room yet.
Yeah.
I have an idea for her.
Okay.
So, you know Snoke?
Yep.
Fuck him. Get rid of that guy. Garbage. Never happened. In the original plans for The Force Awakens, the leader of the First Order was going to be this mysterious, beautiful, statuesque woman described as like a Greek statue.
Oh, that's Gwendolyn Christie right there.
Supreme Commander Phasma.
Yes.
Yes.
In her chrome armor?
But she's, no, but she's also, it's chrome armor, but it's like, it's ceremonial.
Yeah.
She's not the official, like, yeah, she's actually going to show her face.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I like the idea of her being, like, the tyrant. Cause Gwendolyn Christie is always like, ooh, be the physically imposing, horrible person. But she's not actually a warrior. She is the tyrant and the mastermind.
Yeah. It's less Brienne of Tarth and more, maybe not Cersei Lannister, but almost like...
Her dad.
I would almost go, like, maybe a little Melisandre if there's a bit of force sensitivity to her, or, like, maybe...
I don't think so. I think I want a clear delineation between the High Command of the First Order and Kylo's cult.
Okay.
Because they see themselves as the holding the dog's leash.
Yeah. Okay. So...
So she's very Tyrion Lannister. Or not Tyrion, Tywin.
She's giving Tywin.
Also, I want Hux to be her nephew.
Yes. Her terrible nephew.
Her horrible nepotism baby nephew.
Her terrible nephew who's only there because he's her nephew. I'm fine with him being the Starscream of this.
Canonically, he had his dad killed.
Yes, there.
Actually, I think in the canon, he had his dad killed by Phasma, so...
Oh, right. In here, like...
Let's just... It still happened, and it's just a more incredibly fucked up family dynamic.
Yeah. Cue all the fucked up fanfics.
So, okay. So, they're gonna get to the base. Rey and Kylo are going to fight. There's gonna be some fights on the ground. We also have to have a dogfight in the air.
Yeah.
Actually, no. Let's just say that instead of it just being the Millennium Falcon, like, they do bring a whole fleet of Resistance fighters without the New Republic's approval. And creates a dogfight in the air above Ilum. And while this is happening, they use it as a distraction to get in there and rescue their friends.
Yeah.
And then also set the base to self-destruct. The planet's fine, and the city it's in is fine, but all of a sudden, like, this pinnacle of the First Order blew up.
Yeah.
And now we have this interesting situation going into the second movie where, even though we know the Resistance are the good guys, they're the ones who kind of... struck the first blow.
They shot first.
They
shot first.
They did. Leia shot first.
Yeah. To bring back that whole thing.
And that truly leads into the anarchy and chaos that we discussed for the second one.
And that means that Leia would probably have to go on the run too.
Yeah. And so the film's gonna end with, like, we can introduce Holdo as another member of the New Republic Senate.
Yeah.
And she can say, like, officially the Senate disavows and disapproves of your actions, and we will be electing a new leader of the Resistance Party. By the way, Leia, I'm so glad you did that, and I hope to see you again soon. Here's some...
Yep.
I've shut down the security in this sector so you can get out without anyone noticing.
Yep, here's some credits. You're good.
So yeah, so Leia is going to... I don't know, do we want Leia to be the one who goes with Rey to find Luke?
I think... Because, again, we don't want to crowd out the Rey-Luke thing happening. And I think with Leia's faction, she's going to have to, like, be scrambling to organize stuff.
Okay, so how about what was set up for the sequel? So Han is dead. We'll have Poe stay behind with the Resistance to work on, like, the military side of things.
Yeah.
Because then we can bring back the initial distrust he had of Holdo in the second film again. But, like, couch it in a new light. And so Poe is basically going to be Leia's eyes on the inside, which is a bad idea because he is a cowboy.
Yeah. Again, he's our maverick.
But we can have Leia go with Finn because I feel like Finn will still be in denial about his force stuff even after calming a giant lion turtle with a cantina on its back.
Yeah.
And so Leia will kind of, like, see that in him because she also didn't bring up her force stuff for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she'll take Finn with her to be, like, help with diplomacy situations.
And she can teach him more along the lines of, like, Lady Jessica from Children of Dune.
Yeah, and she's not telling him, she's bringing him with her for force training, but she is kind of doing that.
Yeah.
And then we can have, so it would be Rey and R2 and Pommet going to find Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do at least need R2 there.
Yeah.
So then we'd be leaving BB-8 and Chewie with Poe. Back on Alderaan.
Yeah.
Or not Alderaan, it blew up.
Coruscant.
Yes, Coruscant. And yeah, then we can still end it the same way.
Yeah.
I think this is better.
Yeah.
Sorry to you, J.J. Abrams, but we went in with a plan.
Yeah. A little more structurally sound. Not as super dependent on nostalgia. One of my notes is all capitals, italics, bold, underline, kill the hero's journey.
That, again, is the second film.
The second film is, we're going to smother the hero's journey once and for all.
Yeah, I think what we've done is we're rebuilding the sequel trilogy so that the Last Jedi makes sense, but we're also rebuilding the Last Jedi so the sequel trilogy makes sense.
Yeah. So, Tanner, where can you be found on the internet?
I can be found at Sparky Upstart on Blue Sky and Sparky Young Upstart on Tumblr. Lindsay, how about yourself?
I can be found at LindsayM476, that's Lindsay spelled with an A, on Blue Sky, and I can be found at Crash476 on Tumblr.
And we don't have a Blue Sky as of recording this for the podcast yet, but we should have one by the time the episode comes out, so just check in the episode notes.
Yeah. You can also email us at notifireboot.you@gmail.com, or you can send us your comments, critiques, criticisms, and the situations you would use a Jedi mind trick for.
And this is also where you can send us a friendship promo, whether it's an audio clip or a proof for us to read. Either way, we'll put in a free ad for your podcast, your YouTube, or even Kanji Club.
Not If I Reboot You First is a member of the Corner Podcast Network, and you can talk more about this show or others on the network via our Corner Podcast Discord.
As always, our cover art is by Alex Fierce, and her work can be found on ptchew.com, and our theme music is done by Sean Clake, whose contact info was available upon request.
This podcast is recorded on Treaty 4 territory, the traditional lands of the Cree, Sopel, and Assiniboine, and homeland of the Métis.
Also, we did not do a friendship promo this episode, but just in general, we stand with Palestine, and we suggest you donate to causes supporting Palestine and write to your government representatives saying that Palestine is real and stop funneling money towards the Israeli military.
Yeah. So, Tanner, what are we going to do next time?
I don't know, because we haven't actually reached out to any of our guests yet, because we already have guests lined up.
Yeah.
We just don't know when yet. So, it's going to have to be one of us. Do you have something that you think you could have a pitch ready for in 2 weeks?
Oh, God. You know what? I was already writing something for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2.
That's right, and that's actually the one we were going to talk about before we went on the Gigapause.
Yeah.
And that's another one that we have actually both seen, so...
Yeah.
I'll have to rewatch it, but...
So with that, do you remember how we outroed this?
Well, the outro was we're going to give a hint, and then we'd say a pithy remark about it.
Yeah, well... We're going to shame Armie Hammer's kinks again, so...
Tune in next time, where our special agents will have another special day.
Yeah.
But not if we reboot you first.
Bye.
Bye.